This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good afternoon. This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 121 of Within the Trenches. Now, it's been a few weeks since the last episode, but things have been great. And, well, not fully great. There have been some stuff that has happened, but I'll get to that here in a moment. Also, the I Am 911 movement continues to push forward. There's a lot of stories that are coming out. My team and I are still plugging away as much as possible in the inbox. We've got a good chunk of August 30th pushed out there on Facebook and Twitter. But again, that's August 30th, and we are, it's November 15th today. So there are still thousands of stories there. We are just over 800 that we've posted for the memes and the photo album. And we have, I can't even tell you how many notes that we've put out there, but there are many, many stories. Again, there are a lot of things going on with the movement still. And one thing to mention, and I'm pretty sure that I mentioned this before in episode 120, but there's been a lot of people asking on Twitter and on Facebook on when we're going to find out about the reclassification issue and whether it's passed or not. The last thing I saw, and I'm pretty sure it was a post that APCO did about a week or so after the public comment was closed, and that was September 20th of this year. So just this past September, it said that it's going to be around April that the OMB is going to make their final decision and announce that. So we have to wait till April, but we're, again, still sharing all the stories that are in there and new stories that are coming in as much as possible, because it helps keep that in the, in the public eye, and, to remind people what is going on and what we're trying to do. Also, Project I Am 911 is going strong. There's about 172 or so pictures of dispatchers either in everyday life or within the dispatch center holding up chalkboards or pieces of paper that say hashtag I Am 911, or they have I Am 911 with the hashtag written on their hand. And, this whole phase, this next phase of the movement, Project I Am 911, was to, humanize the voice within the trenches and to show people that, who we are and what we do every day. Now, for Halloween, I ended up having a contest where any dispatchers that were out there that were dressing up for Halloween to send in their pictures for a contest. And I ended up putting all of the pictures, I numbered them and went to random.org, and that random number ended up being the winner. So I'm probably going to screw this name up, but Jody is one of the dispatchers from Gunnison Regional Communication Center, and they're out of Colorado. They were the winners for that, so they got a $100 gift card for Pizza Hut to have a pizza party for their shift, or their whole center if they're able to. So they got $100. They're going to have some pizza on the podcast. So congratulations again for you guys. And thank you for participating. And again, that was on behalf of the podcast and the team for that. Now, there are decals that are still coming. My wife and I have been in the studio and we've been busting them out. So we've got a bunch of Dispatch Love, I Am 911, and some state decals as well that have the headset within it. And I posted a picture up with that. Those are going to be coming out within a week or so. So look out for those. One of the things that I was saying earlier that I kind of, I said everything has been great. Well, some shit happened to me a couple of weeks ago where I almost blacked out in the office. And I'm going to save that story Just a moment, but I'm on the mend trying to kick as much ass as possible and continue going. One of the last things for this intro piece here, December 1st will be when I ended up releasing I will start putting out the information for the application for the Within the Trenches Continuing Education Scholarship. And this is going to help a dispatcher out there go to the 2017 Navigator Conference. I've partnered up with the IAED and we are sharing each other's links, posts, a bunch of different things. And things are going great. So December 1st, make sure to look out for that. The information is already online for this month. The scholarship details, what will happen is you'll end up getting a full registration. You also get a pre-conference course of your choice, a $500 travel stipend, an official t-shirt from the podcast, and you'll be a guest on the show. So that is huge. If you've never been to a national conference before, this is your opportunity. All you will have to do is fill out an application, supply your resume, as well as a 1,000-word essay as to, you know, why you would want to go to one and how you will use it, the information that you get in your dispatch center. Now, there's a few other questions, but again, that's all online. You can find that on thejabberlog.com/scholarship/scholarship.php. I'm working on the website to make it a little easier to find. And also the link is on the podcast page on Facebook. So you can find all of that on there. Again, December 1st is when the information on the application to start filling stuff out will be put out there. And if I didn't mention it before, this episode, along with all the other episodes, are sponsored by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. Whew. All right. Finally, got through all that stuff. And now for my guest today, I'm very excited about this, and just met her a few days ago, actually, and posted up a song that she wrote and performed called I Am Waiting. Her name is Bailey. She's a dispatcher and corrections officer out of, now it was Montreal?
Yeah.
Sheriff's Department. And I jacked it up earlier for those who are listening. I said Montreal, so yeah, I had to make sure that she said it because I went to say it and I already bit my tongue. I was like, I'm not going to say it right. So thank you for saying it.
Yeah, no problem.
So how are things going?
They're going really well. Yeah.
Good. Now, you and I were talking just a little bit before this and I was telling you about this incident. So for those who are listening, what Bailey and I were talking about was the fact that a few weeks ago, I almost blacked out here in the office where I work. Now, I was talking to one of my coworkers and I just out of nowhere, everything started spinning and it started to close in. Like I was having like tunnel vision. It was the craziest thing. And I almost blacked out and my coworker Jack told me to sit down. So I sat down and as soon as I sat down, I snapped out of it. But I had this pullover on and I started sweating and I started freaking out. I started panicking. And so I took this thing off and I was telling Bailey that I immediately started going through my EMD protocol. I don't know why, but that was the first thing I started doing was going through and I was remembering or trying to remember the stroke card. I threw up my left arm and I started saying the early bird catches the worm. And my coworker was looking at me like, what the hell are you doing? And he even said, what are you doing? And I could not break from what I was doing because I was going through and I'm looking at him and I said, no, man, I'm cool. I'm going through my protocols from dispatch. And he just looked at me like I was a goof. But I don't know. I mean, what would you do if you were in that situation? Would you start thinking about your dispatching protocols or what would you do?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like personally, I probably would because that's kind of like, I guess when other people are like describing weird symptoms and stuff, I kind of just go back in my head and I'm like, I feel like I've seen these somewhere. Like, what do these lead to? What do you do for this?
Right. And I looked at him and I said, does my left side of my face look like it's drooping? And he goes, no. He goes, why? And I said, because, man, I said, in this stroke card, these are some of the main symptoms of stroking out.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah, it was crazy. But he was saying, are you stroking out? And I said, no. I said, you wouldn't be able to understand me if I was stroking out. I said, and I probably would have fallen over or something. I said, I had my left arm all the way up and I was able to keep it up. If it would have like started falling down, then I've got an issue. And I didn't have any, you know, pain or numbness on my left side. So I was good. But because I was panicking and I have asthma, I probably would have been considered a priority one either way because I was having trouble breathing.
Yep.
Oh, good Lord. I've been out of dispatch for almost 4 years now, and I can't believe I remember all of that.
Yeah, no, it's not going to leave for a while, if it ever does.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the other, another story that I was telling you about earlier, or I was about to tell you about, was one of my son's friends came over to visit. Now, this was a few years ago, so I was still living in Michigan at the time. And they were playing outside with these branches, and his friend got clocked in the head. And he was bleeding a little bit, and he comes in and he goes, am I okay? And I said, no, not exactly. You're bleeding, man. And I bring him into the bathroom and stuff, and I get a dry cloth and I have him put it on his head. I mean, it wasn't enough for, you know, it wasn't anything like stitches. You know, he wouldn't need stitches or a hospital visit, but it was bleeding enough that, you know, we had to put pressure on it. And I started going into my protocols, and I started doing my pre-arrival instructions with him, and I'm looking at him as he's pressing, and I'm telling him, you need to press, you know, firm pressure and do not lift it. If it continues to bleed, you're not pressing hard enough. And he's looking at me, and at the time he had to have been probably about 8 or 9, and he's looking at me and he goes, Mr. Martinez, Okay, I'll keep firm pressure on it. And I thought, what are you doing? You know, about myself, I was thinking, I'm not on the phone. Why the hell am I going through? Yeah, so that.
Yeah, well, it's not very often you have to use those protocols and like be there to use your hands and to be the one to actually do it. Like so often we're just used to being the ones giving the instructions and telling people, hey, this is what you need to do. And, you know, don't do this. So I would totally understand that because it is completely different when you actually can like be there and like use your hands for it, because normally you're just, you know, are you doing this? Like, cause I can't see, like, make sure you're actually doing this.
Right. Yeah. And I couldn't put them on hold or anything else, or and I'm trying to think in my head everything that I was supposed to say or needed to say, and he's just staring at me like I've lost my mind, because he couldn't understand why I was talking to him that way. And right. I said, I used to dispatch, buddy. And he goes, oh, okay. Like he didn't know what else to say. And we just kind of stood there staring at each other. I was like, all right, well, I guess, just go and sit down until it stops bleeding. And it stopped bleeding right away, pretty much. And then he went back outside and they started playing again. But mm-hmm. we had to tell his parents what happened and stuff, of course. And I said, he might tell you that I'm like some weirdo or something, because I was telling him all this different shit, and they're like, oh no, it's completely fine. And I said, okay, good. Good. I didn't freak him out too much.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So you know what? I don't think I said the state that you are dispatching out of. It's North Dakota, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how long have you been at the Sheriff's Department?
Well, I worked for a year and a half, when I first started, and then, life kind of beat me down a little bit. So I ended up moving for a little over 10 months, and then I've been back now for almost 2 years. And so with the same department.
Okay. Gotcha. So then how did you get it involved into 911, or I mean, I guess corrections to begin with? Cause that's, you're doing both then right now, right?
Yeah. Yep. We're a really small agency. So we have 2 employees on per shift, and we do the correction side of it as well as the dispatch side. And
what?
I actually live in a really, really tiny town in a fairly small county. And when I first started working, I was actually working at a gas station, and the sheriff's office had a charge account. So the sheriff and the chief deputy kept coming in to, you know, fuel up their vehicles and charge it to the account. And a couple of times they came in and they told me I needed to come apply for a dispatch job. And I kind of just thought they were crazy because I'd only see them, you know, like here and there coming to get fuel, and they didn't really know me. And I was like, that's a weird thing. So I went in to pick up an application, and the chief deputy happened to be in the office, and he was like, fill it out now. And while I was sitting there filling it out, he called the sheriff to see when they could interview me. So I came in for the next day after filling out my application to interview, and I left with a job.
Damn.
Yeah. So it was kind of crazy.
So did they, okay. So you said nobody knew you, right?
Other than coming in and charging fuel on the account. Nope. That was it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, well, you answered one of the questions I was going to next was, you know, was there anybody in the industry, but you didn't have anybody there. So, but do you have anybody, you know, any, you know, family members or friends or anything like that, that are in the public safety field at all?
I have an uncle who's an officer, in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And, that's honestly like about it. My dad was an MP for a while when he was in the Navy. I never even really considered like a job in law enforcement. Really. It wasn't on my list of like, hey, I'm going to do this, or, you know, I didn't even really like, I'd never even considered dispatch. And then when they kept coming in, they were very persistent. They kept telling me, you need to come apply. You need to come apply. So eventually I was just like, okay, I guess I'll apply. Like, I probably won't get the job. I have no experience. I didn't have a college degree or anything. Like, So it was like, there's no way. And then I walked out of the interview with a job. It was crazy.
Wow. So what was the interview like then?
probably not as in depth or long as it should have been for a dispatch position.
Yeah.
I mean, we're really old school. The sheriff, in Montrose County has actually been sheriff since my dad was in middle school and lived here in North Dakota. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's been sheriff for a really long time. And for a long time, they just kind of did things the way, I don't know, like it seems like it's still, they're still moving in the same direction they were when he probably took office. So really, he asked my name, you know, he asked if I had a life partner that was, you know, willing to work with the shifts. We work 4-on-2-off and they're rotating every week. Mm-hmm. So I usually work like a swing and then I have 2 days off and then I work overnights. So really they just asked about that. You know, they asked the general questions like, what are your, you know, your major flaws and stuff like that. So it was just really kind of random. And then he's like, well, yeah, we'd really like you to join our team. And here I am, this like 19-year-old kid thinking this guy's crazy. I have no like concept of what dispatch even is.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, all right, let's do this then.
See, they definitely saw something in you then. Whatever yeah. It was, that's awesome. Because I mean,
yeah, it was cool, but
it's this whole job. I mean, people have asked me the same thing, you know, what school or what did you do, you know, schooling wise to do this. And I said, I didn't, all I had at the time when I started working in dispatch in Florida originally was, retail management experience. And they said, what? And I said, yeah, I said, that's all I had. I said, really, the job is all about common sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get some training along the way and stuff, but you know, a lot of people don't understand that. So you walk out of there with a job and then, how long did it take for them to actually, I mean, because there was a background check and everything, right?
Yeah. I don't know exactly the protocol for that. I mean, we run checks on people that come in for employment and stuff. And it's just like a general, like we run their criminal history and stuff. And if nothing pops up, like essentially they get the job.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
So you get the job and then you go in for your first day. What was it like for you in the beginning?
It was a lot. There's a lot to take in. Especially when I first started, we didn't have a CAD system. We essentially wrote everything down on notepads and just tried to get the the times correct. Mm-hmm. And then after a while, if it slowed down, we would input our logs into an Excel spreadsheet. And if like your shift was too long, then you got overtime because you're sitting there like typing in these logs. And if the shift that came in after you was nice, they'd like input them at the correct time for you.
Oh.
So it was crazy. And that very first night, we actually did more corrections than dispatch because we booked in 5 people. And it was just insane. There was a lot going on.
I can't imagine going in for dispatch, for one, not knowing really what all dispatch does, and then them saying, well, you know, we also do corrections and we're going to train you on that as well. And then you've got five people that comes in and,
yeah. And so, I mean, and I filled an empty slot. So they put me on a shift to train, but there wasn't like, cause normally there's two people to a shift. So it was just the person training me and me on the shift. So it wasn't really like, I got to like sit and watch as they did stuff. Like it was kind of like I jumped in right away. I was answering phones that first night and like write down my logs, and it was just crazy. It was so busy, but
obviously you enjoyed it though.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. There's definitely some, I don't know. There's something about it. I love interacting with the deputies and the officers, and corrections isn't my favorite side of things, but I'm, you know, I do it cause it's part of my job right now.
Right.
We're actually building a new facility for the county. So I'm going to be here in about a month just switching. So I'll be just dispatch, which I'm super excited about.
Mm-hmm.
Cause we still have some fairly old equipment. So like we don't have headsets or anything. We use like the old PSAP phones, and it's kind of interesting, but I'm really excited to get some upgrades and to use the new equipment. So
that's going to be awesome. So do you have a CAT system now then?
We do. Yeah. We are currently using the Zerker suites.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, I really like it. It's pretty user-friendly, and it's nice because it mixes the corrections with the dispatch really easy.
That's pretty awesome, because that's a plug for them too. So I'm going to have to reach out to them and be like, hey, there's a plug on the podcast for you guys.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's awesome that you said that you started out on just notepads and stuff, because when I started out, I mean, we had a CAD system, but it was more or less done in a, I can't even explain it. It was like almost like a Word doc that we were using in Florida, but one of our dispatchers was also a programmer. So he made up his own. So that's what we were using. And when I moved from Florida back home to Michigan and started working with Allegan, we had a CAD system there as well. However, every night at 1 a.m., it would shut down. It would have to shut down for maintenance. It would not come back up until 4 a.m. So for that whole window of time, we had paper pad. And, you know, we'd have to write everything down. So then when we switched from that one and upgraded to New World CAD systems, which I believe now they're Tyler Technologies. But during that time, when we were using them, and it would go down and we would have newer dispatchers, they would freak out and they would say, well, what do we do? What do we do?
Yep.
We don't have a CAD system now. And I would throw them a pad of paper and say, here's your CAD system.
Yep, exactly.
And they would think that I was joking, and I'd say, no, you start writing your shit down, because how else are you going to do it? Unless you're going to keep it all in your head, write it down, write down the time, and then we'll add in the CAD calls later on. Just, you got to do it this way.
Yeah, definitely. Well, like every time we get a newer dispatcher in and they like complain about something dumb that the CAD did or something they don't like about it, I will pull up, we have old logs saved on our computer, and I will pull them up and be like, at least you're not writing them on paper and having them to enter, like having to enter them in here. And they just look at me like I'm insane. And I'm like, no, really, this is what we did.
Sweet. So you get to talk to them like an old seasoned veteran.
Oh yes, definitely.
That's funny. Okay. So you go in there, your first day is crazy. What is your training end up being like? Because, I mean, they pretty much threw you to the wolves. And that's kind of what happened to me when I started out in Florida. I went in for midnight shift, and I sat with my trainer. I watched him take a 911 call, and he goes, the next one's yours. And I thought he was joking until he gave me that, I'm going to put my foot in your ass. Look, no, I'm not joking. And, you know, I had to take that next call. So what was your training like from there then? Because you're doing both dispatch as well as corrections.
Right. I mean, essentially, our training period is like 2 weeks, and then you still are supposed to be with somebody that has been there longer, but you're not considered a trainee anymore. You're just on probation for 6 months. And so because I was filling an empty slot, like I kind of just started working, and it was kind of like full on, like I kind of had to just figure it out. The first 2 weeks of training, I did like, I read the policies and, you know, I just kind of watched and listened, and I picked it up fairly easy. And I think it helped being young and like able to just kind of like watch and learn type of a thing. And mm-hmm. all of the deputies we had that were really, really great too. So it helped that they were willing to like work with me and be patient. But I mean, after like 2 weeks, there was a couple of times where, you know, the person would call in sick and my supervisor, like, you feel good working by yourself? Okay, great. Here you are. You're on shift by yourself. And I remember this one time I had accidents going off and I had just thrown spaghetti into a pot for the inmates' dinner. And, I had an accident. I had to page fire out to it. So I set off the alarm and I was like, there's no way I can finish dinner for the inmates. So I called my supervisor and she's like, I'm already on my way. I heard the siren.
Wait a minute. So, let's rewind here just a minute. Okay. I think I heard you right. You were making dinner for the inmates?
Yes, because I was also doing corrections.
And as a corrections officer, you had to make dinner for them. Interesting.
Yes. Well, our facility only holds 12.
Okay.
So right now we actually hand make everything. So the overnight shifts will like pre-prepare the dinner for that later that day. Mm-hmm. And then the evening shift or like the swing shift has to like put it in the oven and then serve it to the inmates that we have.
This is fascinating.
I knew you were going to get a laugh out of this because I was like, we are not like any other agency that I know of out there.
Right. No, I've never heard of this before. The only thing that I had to do, because when I first started dispatching, it was a smaller police department. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's small enough that it only has like 2 traffic lights, I think. Okay. I mean, it's a pretty small one. And it had one holding cell. And whenever they brought somebody in, you know, the sheriff's department, they would send a deputy out to pick, you know, whoever up and take them to the county jail.
Yeah.
But I never had to, you know, say anything to them. Usually somebody was there. Mm-hmm. The only thing I had to do was I would have to call myself out of service. And I would have to say, well, I didn't have to. I said it jokingly. With whichever officer that was on, but I would say frostproof to, you know, 108, go ahead. And I said, I'm going to be 10-7 for just a moment, 10-1. And they'd say, okay, or 10-2, mm-hmm. depending on what I had to go to, you know, going to the bathroom. And so I would have to use those codes, but that was the only thing. And I would actually leave, but I would come back and sometimes there would be somebody standing there because it was, so they could walk into the police department and then it was just this little bit of glass. Mm-hmm. I mean, if anybody wanted to, they could put a gun over that glass to shoot me or something if they wanted. You know, there was nothing else there. But mm-hmm. Other than that, that's the only thing I ever had to really do. So that's pretty interesting. I never had to make food for anyone except for myself.
Yeah. Well, when we work, we do everything with the inmates. We book them in, we process them, we take their picture, their fingerprints. So if you're the only one that's on shift, then you're kind of doing, like, if the phone rings or something, then you have to stall the inmate process so you can go answer the phone. And, like, a lot of the times, like, the deputies know if you're on by yourself so that they'll, like, kind of, like, stand by with their traffic. They'll initiate their own stops and stuff so I don't mm-hmm. have to worry about it. And then there's
well, that's always good, where, then.
Yeah, our deputies are actually cross-trained, so they do their first 2 weeks in dispatch before they go out on the road. So there have been several times I'll, like, call one in and be like, hey, I need you to come sit in dispatch because I need to do something.
Oh, you kind of had a little dispatch voice going there.
Oh, yeah. But yeah. Yep. So, but I mean, we're all family. So, I mean, they definitely help out when I need the help. So.
And that's pretty awesome because, and those who are listening, if you don't do something like this, you guys should, because at the last PSAP that I was at, they started doing this where, when they had a new deputy come on, a new hire, they would have them sit in dispatch for, I don't know, 2 to 4 hours or something. But they had to complete this in order for them to know how we do things on our side versus, you know, what it's like when they're riding around and they just hear it over the radio. Right. So they started doing this a lot more, but they're not, I wouldn't say that they're cross-trained, not as cool as your guys are, because we would have, and Nobody get this twisted. I definitely enjoyed it when they would come into dispatch and help us out. But sometimes it was almost hindering rather than helping because, you know, we would have crazy storms coming through and we've got trees and wires down and we're having to call utilities and such or road commission for the trees. And some of the deputies would come in and say, well, we'll take over the phone or whatever for or call the road commission so that they can pick up, you know, the trees and such. But it would be balls to the wall crazy in there. And they would you would see them walk in and excuse me, their eyes would look like they were about to pop out of their head. And they would say, how the hell do you guys do this? And we're like, we're awesome like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. It definitely gives them like a healthier respect. I can tell the difference. I mean, our deputies kind of, I mean, with the CAD system, especially, they know when we get busy. So they have like this healthier respect of what all we're doing and what all we're taking care of. And they're a little, they tend to be a little more patient than with like the city officers that don't train with the county. So that we dispatch for them, but they're not with our agency. And so there's like a healthier respect with the deputies than I think with some of the officers because they've been in that chair and they know how insane it can get.
Yeah, I fully agree. In the county that I worked in, though, a lot of our deputies actually worked on some of the city PDs. So we were actually able to kind of unify that way. I mean, the amount of camaraderie that was going on there, that was always good that we had people that were not only in the city PD or they were volunteer firemen or EMS or something. So we had a good mix of people and they, I loved every one of them. It was always a good time. We had a good time. We hung out a lot, but when it came to dispatch, they would come in and they'd be like, hell no, I do not want to do what you're doing.
I know. Well, and the guys that are willing to come in and help me if I need someone to take phones or something, they're like, I'll answer phones and radio, but if 911 goes off, you better get your ass back in here because I'm not taking care of it.
Right.
Like, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that too. They'd be like, you know, I can see it all day and deal with it, but having to hear it and not be able to, you know, touch it or feel it or you know, something like that. I don't know how you guys are doing it. I'm like, well,
yeah. And I think that's probably the hardest part about our job is that, I think most people just think that we just sit and answer phones all day, but it is really hard to be on the other end of that phone, knowing how to help somebody and then knowing you can't help them. The only thing you can do to help them is get help faster and get them there as fast as you can and know that you're sending the right people. But it's really hard to go throughout your day taking emergency call after emergency call and not being able to physically help the people that you're listening to screaming on the other end or crying on the other end of the phone. And I think that's probably one of the hardest parts of being a dispatcher.
Yeah, sometimes our imaginations can be way worse than the real thing.
Oh, definitely.
Because you're trying to think or picture everything that's going on there to be able to, I mean, just like you're saying, I mean, we're trying to use every resource that we have in order to do that. And if we can picture what's going on, maybe we can think of something that's around there that can help out. Like when somebody doesn't know their address or if they're visiting and they don't know the address there, what do people usually say? Well, look for a piece of mail.
Yep.
And I've talked to, you know, just people in the public and have said that same thing. And they've said, oh, I didn't think about that. I'm like, well, that's why we're awesome. Because we think of all these different things. So what about your corrections? What all did they say, or not so much say, but what all did you have to do for your training for that? I mean, do you get to learn like self-defense and stuff? Or?
Well, you have to get certified as a correctional officer. So I'm actually certified in EMD and as a correctional officer through the state of North Dakota.
Very nice.
Yeah. So there's three of us right now that are cross-trained in corrections, and then we have a bunch of new hires that are just doing the dispatch aspect because we're going to be switching over soon. But there is the three of us that dispatch on a daily basis that are, you know, we have the dispatch and then we also have the corrections training also. So
nice.
It's kind of fun. We got to, you know, you I didn't get to go to the academy, but the other girls, they did get to go to the actual state academy to do corrections. And you get to learn all of, like, the takedown moves and, like, properly handcuffing people and uncuffing them. And I don't know, it was kind of fun. And it was definitely interesting to learn all of that when you're, like, I'm much more comfortable dealing with people, like, on the phone. Mm-hmm. I tend to get a little bit more of a temper. And I can definitely keep my cool a lot better on the phone than if somebody's up and in my face. So.
Right. Well, you know, one of the good things, and I've said this to people many times, that when you've worked in dispatch long enough, you can, you know, you don't have to be a complete asshole or anything, but you can, right. you can develop a firm tone, mm-hmm. a strong voice. And you can sound like a jerk while still being professional.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And then in those rare instances where you need it, that mute button is your best friend.
Of course. As long as you press it.
Yes. Yeah. That's the main thing. Like, definitely make sure you press it. Because otherwise, I don't know.
There's an episode. I'm trying to remember what episode number it was now. I can't even remember. It was episode 105 or 104, one of those. But it was at this past Indiana Nina. I did a live episode with an audience and I had a panel. And there was an assistant director on there on that panel with me. And she was telling this story about it was wintertime. A neighboring agency had called asking if they could send somebody out to help. And it was going crazy in there and she was frustrated. So she went to put them on hold and she just was saying, you know, a bunch of different swear words. Like, we're so busy. How do you think we're going to be able to do this? And then she took a deep breath, got back on the line and said, yeah, we'll do as much as we can. We'll get somebody out there. And the person on the other end said, thank you. I appreciate that. But next time, you tell me you're going to put me on hold because I heard everything you said.
Yep. I know. Yeah. Yeah. Those are bad instances where you accidentally, you know, don't mute the line or somebody cues up a mic right in the middle of your rant.
Oh, those are the best times when someone keys up and you're bitching and saying stuff and they're like, oh, I just keyed up. You're like, damn it.
Yep.
Send a message out.
A deputy or something. Like, right. Hey. Just so you know, you said this on air. Yep. Yeah, that was bad.
I had a button on our main radios that the button to key up would stick. And I remember it stuck once and I'm hitting it really hard for it to unstick. And I said a bunch of stuff and somebody sent me a message and it was just a bunch of LOLs. I said, we heard all of that, man. I was like, oh, crap. Oh, well, good thing I'm the supervisor and nobody's going to do anything about it.
Yeah, there you go. I know. Well, I'm always worried it's going to be one of those days where, like, the sheriff or the chief deputy ends up, like, just listening on the radio and stuff. I'm like, it's going to be one of those times. And
right.
They're going to call up here and be like, hey.
Or, like, the FCC is listening or something.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know. It's all good though. Comes with the job.
Exactly. Yes. That's always fun. That's what makes it a lot of fun there. Especially, you know, it breaks up what can be the monotony of dispatch sometimes.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So looking back in the beginning with all this training and how you got pushed in pretty much right off the bat, mm-hmm. did you take, I mean, you said you were taking phone calls. So did you take any 911 calls? And if so, what was your first 911 call?
I was taking calls pretty much right away. And to be honest, I don't remember my first 911 call.
What?
I feel like there was probably just so much going on that, like, it honestly was probably one of those calls where it's like, hey, there's cows out on the highway. we get a lot of calls for that. And yeah, so I really honestly don't remember the first call. There was just, doing both sides of it and then, you know, and of course, like your first few 911 calls, you're like so amped up on adrenaline that I don't know. I just forgot it.
Right. And I've said it many times and I will always say it. I've always described 911 dispatcher taking a high priority 911 call, like getting in a fast car, slamming the pedal to the metal and letting go of the steering wheel.
Yep.
Because it's it's crazy. I mean, there's so many things going on and you're trying to keep everyone safe as possible or even get information to begin with. If someone's just screaming, it's so crazy that, you know, it's sometimes it's even hard to remember some of the calls because it happens so fast that, you know, someone will ask you about it later on. You're thinking, you know, give me a moment to try to process that, or I'm going to have to play it back because that was so intense and so fast that I have to remember everything that happened.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And it does it. Yeah. When it happens that fast, sometimes it just kind of like in and out, like,
right. And then you're to the next call.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing you can do. Mm-mm. So what about a call that has stuck with you?
Yeah. So I do find it just like a tangent here. I do find it very interesting that most of the people I've talked to in dispatch, when you ask them like a call that stuck to them, most people want to hear like, you know, like a funny call or, you know, like a really like bad accident or something. And I know for me and a lot of people I've talked to, the calls that stick with you are just like mostly like the really sad ones. Mm-hmm. And the one that really sticks in my mind is I got a call from a man and he was very calm and just, he gave me his address right away. He gave me his name and I was trying to remember, his name was familiar to me, but I couldn't figure it out. And he said, you know, I woke up this morning, my wife said she needed to go to the hospital. She didn't feel right. And then she said she was going to get ready. So I went to take a shower. And when he came back, she was gone. And so when he's on the phone with me, I was like, okay, are you, you know, do you know how to do CPR? Do you want me to walk you through it? And he's like, yeah, I've been trained and, you know, I'll do CPR. And so he started CPR and mostly just broke down sobbing. So I'm trying to keep my emotions under check while I'm counting for him as he's just, you can just hear him sobbing and saying, come on, baby, come on, baby. And like, that's probably the call that sticks with me. And I still for a while couldn't place his name until I was at dinner at my parents' house. My mom was like, oh, you know, my old boss, his wife passed away and he had done CPR on her. And right then it clicked. Like I had met this man before and I had heard all about his wife. And a couple of days later, I saw him at the post office and I really just wanted to give him a hug, but he didn't know who I was and I didn't want to make it awkward. But that's probably like the call that really sticks with me, because I remember just hanging up the phone when the ambulance got there and I just turned to my partner on that shift, and she's also my best friend, and I lost it. Like I just completely bawled. I mean, it's so hard to sit and listen to these people, just their hearts are breaking. And sometimes you can turn those emotions off and you can kind of just, you know, get into the job and do the job. But there are those calls where it really, really affects you, like really deep down.
Oh man, that is definitely a hard one. And as you were just saying all of that, I've taken calls similar to what you were just describing. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how, and I'm sure it happens to every dispatcher, just there's one little thing that can trigger it. You know, the thought or just the name, you know, like you were saying, you couldn't place his name and then it came up and you remember. This past August, it was in Orlando for the National APCO Conference. And my wife is from Florida. So we were staying at her parents' house. And I had started watching Stranger Things.
Yeah, okay.
good show.
Yes, definitely.
So the last episode, well, for those who are listening, spoiler alert, but there's a scene in there where they're doing CPR. Mm-hmm. And the deputy or the sheriff, he's giving CPR to the kid and he's saying, come on, buddy. And it took everything inside me to not lose it. Like I had to bite my lip. I'm getting goosebumps now thinking about it, but I had to bite my lip because I took a phone call where this kid had flipped his four wheeler and his parents had called and I was telling them how to do CPR. And the first deputy on scene, I could hear him when he keyed up and said that he was on scene and he was running. Like you could hear it, that he was hauling ass out there. Yeah. And I hear him get close to the parents and the phone is just laying there because they're doing CPR. And he takes over doing CPR and he is saying that same thing. Come on, buddy. Come on, buddy. And watching that scene in that show made me have that flashback. Like, I hadn't thought about that in a while. And in a long time. And that made me flash back to that exact moment. And it took everything for me not to freaking lose it. I mean, I was tearing up and I was biting my lip and I was like, come on, hold it together, hold it together. Yeah. And I'm watching this scene play out and I'm imagining this is what it was like when I took that phone call. And I remember I didn't hang up the phone either because I needed that closure. I needed to know. But then, you know, they ended up calling it. He ended up passing away. But it was, you know, one of those things, like, just like you, it was just something that triggered it. That was actually the first picture that I posted for the I Am 911 movement that got that whole thing started. But your call, I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, well, technically I can. Like I said, I've taken calls similar to that where you know, couples have awakened and their loved one is dead. But, you know, for you to take that and, you know, it sticks with you. I mean, how else do you deal with something like that?
Exactly.
Now, did you have a debriefing or anything after you took that call, or was it was just you and your best friend there? And was that enough? Because that's always good to have the chance to speak to somebody who's, you know, in the same field because they understand.
Oh, yeah. No, and we don't really have like a debriefing, like, process or protocol set in place, but it definitely was good to have her because she just stood up and she just hugged me until I was able to calm down and kind of just get back to work. It's difficult because, I mean, you're still there, you still have to do your job even when the bad calls really affect you,
right?
And so it was definitely nice to have her there. And like, yeah, like you said, she knew the emotions and she's been there before, and you know, and so it's definitely nice to have that. Then we don't work on the same shift anymore, but she's still kind of like my sounding board for when I need to just let stuff go, because she understands. So that, it was definitely nice to have her there, because that was probably one of my toughest calls so far.
Wow. Now, earlier in the episode, I mentioned that you wrote and you performed a song, and it's called I Am Waiting. Now, you telling me this story, was this possibly in any way some inspiration for the song, or was it just
definitely
in there?
It was definitely part of it. Yeah. I think I have taken a lot of just general like emotions and the things that we go through and stuff that I've heard from other dispatchers and just put a lot of that into the song. The main inspiration for part of the chorus talks about the man in the accident, and for that line is like, it definitely has like, it resonates with me. We took a really bad accident right at shift change. A semi oil tanker had pulled out onto a foggy highway. And there ended up being 3 or 4 cars that had hit the semi. And I got a call on the admin, cause the PSAP phone lines had all filled up, and I could just hear this guy yelling from his, it was actually the OnStar that called. And I can just hear him yelling inside of his truck saying, you know, the semi behind me is on fire there. I'm going to die. I am going to die. And he just kept repeating that and repeating that. And I kept telling him, you know, sir, help's on the way. Like, I didn't want to tell him everything would be okay because I didn't know. But I just kept telling him, you know, people are on their way, you're going to get help. And he's like, no, I can see people. They're standing there and they're watching. Nobody is coming to help me. And, eventually the line went dead, and I hung up the phone, and it was shift change. So I clocked out and I went home. And the next day I came in and I was looking, it was a 3-person fatality. And I was looking at trying to see if one of them was my caller, and he had actually pulled himself out of his pickup with 3 spots in his back broken.
Oh,
and
wow.
They got him to the hospital and he was fine. After all the healing and stuff, but he made it. And so that was probably one of the main inspiring calls for that song.
Jeez. That's a crazy call for sure.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, having to talk to him and him saying that to you. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to play the song here really quick. And then we'll go from there.
Okay.
got my city across from that screen. I am waiting. We don't pick the calls. We don't dare play God. We don't have the time to wait. From the man in the accident to the mother whose child won't breathe. Just breathe. To the heroes who wear a badge. You want home safely. Oh, I am waiting. I'm the voice that brings the light in all your nightmares come true. I'm the calm in all the noise. Oh, I am waiting. Promise I'm a helping hand, and I will see to all of your needs, yeah. From the man in the accident, to the mother whose child won't breathe, just breathe. To the hero who wears the badge, you want home safely, oh, I am. Waiting. I'm a voice that brings the light in all your nightmares come true. Calm in all the noise, oh, I am waiting. All the ones I've lost. Bones every time I pick up that phone. From the man in the accident to the mother whose child won't breathe, just breathe. To the hero who wears a badge that you want home safely. Oh, I. What's your emergency? Whoa. From the man in the accident to the mother whose child won't breathe, just breathe. To the hero who wears the badge that you want home safely. Oh, I am waiting. The voice that brings the light amidst your nightmares come true. I'm the calm in all the noise. Oh, I am waiting. What's your emergency? What's your emergency?
Damn good song. Well done.
Thank you.
You have got an excellent voice.
Thank you.
I played that for my wife just the other day. And when the song finished, I looked over at her because we were driving back, from Shipshewana here in Indiana. And I look at her face and she just had this look. And I said, "What'd you think?" And she goes, "Is this a dispatcher that you know?" And I said, "I guess I know her, kind of." I said, "She's going to be on the podcast here pretty soon." And I said, "Yeah, she's a dispatcher out of North Dakota." And she goes, "Does she know that she doesn't need to dispatch, that she could do other things?" And I said, "She loves what she does." I said, "But yeah," I was like, "she's got a great voice, an excellent song." So again,
yeah,
well done. So I've been sharing that like crazy. And
well, thank you. I appreciate it.
No, definitely. When my admin, Jessica, when she sent me a message and she said, there's the message came in and it just says hashtag IM911. I said, and she goes, it's a song. And I said, oh, really? And she goes, yeah. She goes, it was done for something else, but it was submitted this way. And I said, well, what's it about? And she goes, well, it's just, you know, listen to it. I was like, okay. So I listened to it. And I don't think I was even a minute into the song that's when I started sending you messages saying, I want to push this. I need to have you on the podcast.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I can't say enough about it. So
well done. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You are very welcome. So going into the wrap up of this, you know, what would you say to somebody who's thinking about getting into this line of work?
I always think it's interesting to answer questions like that because I usually tell people don't, or to at least think really, really hard about it. I think it's really common for people to think that we just have a desk job and that our jobs are easy. And there is quite an emotional toll that is taken when you're dispatching. And I mean, there's a lot of good and there's also a lot of bad that comes with it. So if you're going into it unprepared or you think it's like this easy job where it's kind of exciting at times, but I mean, you kind of just have to be prepared for it. And if that's really what you want, then yeah, go for it. And, you know, just be aware that it's not just an easy like desk job.
Right. Yeah. Cause I mean, you end up kind of losing a lot of holidays and times.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
Especially for those who have kids and stuff, you know, you lose out on a lot.
Definitely. Yep.
No, that's awesome. Thank you very much for the honesty there, saying that right off the bat, because a lot of people, you know, won't say that. And some do, but, you know, some will just, you know, go on and say, you know, what's good about it and some of the bad and stuff. But for you to say that, that's excellent. The honesty is appreciated. And I know listeners will definitely enjoy that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I love my job, but it's definitely not meant for everyone. And if you're going to get into dispatch, just make sure it's really what you want.
Right, definitely. So how can people find you, I guess, well, without sounding like a creeper, how can people find you online, you know, for your music or, you know, on Twitter or Facebook or anything like that, you know, for the stuff that you do?
Right. I mean, I guess I have, and I honestly haven't done anything with Twitter in a long time until you asked me for my handle. But I guess on Twitter, it's just at BatLifeBay. I have a slight obsession with Batman.
Oh, sweet.
So, yeah. And then I have a couple of my songs up, including I Am Waiting on Bandcamp. And that's just baileyjohnson.bandcamp.com. So...
Awesome. I will make sure to put those links up as well on the blog post that'll go along with this podcast episode. So again, thank you very, very much for being on the show. It was a lot of fun. I hope you had fun.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
It was a good time and you are welcome anytime to come on the show. This was good stuff. So for those who are listening, going into the wrap up of this here, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us. And that's going to be WTTpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and that's at 901 podcast. You can find us on Facebook and like us there. It's facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. And again, December 1st will be when the application will be available for the Within the Trenches Continuing Education Scholarship that will send a dispatcher out to the 2017 Navigator Conference. All that information is online already. That's the jabberlog.com/scholarship/scholarship.php. And then you can hear the podcast 24/7 on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, and the jabberlog.com. Have a good one, everybody.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.